I'd have to say thank you for the opportunity for to talk to everybody and to represent Pfizer Animal Genetics in this area of whole genome selection. I'd have to say, as someone who spent a lifetime in breeding cattle and managing operations and then becoming an animal breeder in that, this is really an exciting time. I mean, everybody, after today, you got to be excited. I mean, the technology, what's going on, this is phenomenal. And you think about historically, this slide I like to use because this is my life of the last over 40 years now. But even listening to Dr. Tallman, and we start talking about visual phenotyping and trying to really see animals and how well do we see traits, and it comes back to traits, genetic selection, trying to improve animals and add value. But we look through all of those and think about just in history. I remember total performance records, filling out sheets as a kid in the 70s, raising Herefords, the TPR programs. And when we implemented EPDs in the mid-80s, and what an interesting time that was, and the up-and-down cycles in the road and the rough bumps, and as the databases grew and things stabilized, the roller coaster rides with sires, they became progeny tested, weren't quite as severe. And then we've had economic indexes hit in the last 10 years. Selection theory, index theory has been around for a long time, but really has made some significant advances, and I think are going to play a huge role in whatever our genetic selection tools are. But now we're adding some more tools, and over the last little over a decade now that I've been involved in this field of trying to understand the molecular basis of genetics, getting at it at a DNA level, quantitative traits. We're still doing quantitative genetics. We're taking it down to a very, very finite level that this animal is this at this location. And how does that add prediction and accuracy to what we're doing in genetic selection? And that's what today has been completely about, and extremely exciting when you think about it. So where does this field go? I think the answer is, and we heard it this morning, you just have to listen to, like, Dorian Garrett get so excited about what's happened in the last 12 months. I've been fortunate to be involved with some of the technological advances that happened with some of the tools in the field. It was a joy to be involved in that process and start seeing what 5 years ago, running 200-300 markers in a discovery experiment was a laborious, very expensive proposition. And suddenly we're doing an assay over a two-day period and we're generating 50,000 markers on an animal for the same cost. And that is just incredible, the leaps and bounds that the technology makes. And at Pfizer Animal Genetics, we're extremely committed to being part of that. So whole genome selection, you know, we've talked a lot about it, but it's using a lot of markers to predict variation across the whole genome. Very simple and straightforward, a single analysis. What tools are we going to need and how are we going to do it the best to achieve higher accuracies than the current technology? And that's the big one. Can we get more predictive power, higher accuracies for these young animals to make genetic selection? It's going to be huge. And that is the true value of molecular technology, is being able to predict animals at a younger age, take risk out of investment for those individuals at the very top of the pyramid that are people are buying the commercial cattle to feed the commercial industry, so to say, the genetics that feed it, when you think about it like that. So you're taking out risk for your clients to make genetic improvement in that regard. And then you start thinking about, at the very top of the pyramid, being able to make selection and move things ahead faster. And to me, it's an extremely, extremely exciting time in that regard. So this first part, whole genome selection, is it important to the industry? I think the answer has been answered today over and over and over, and we all know what it is. It's going to be part of it. The technology as we have known it, changed about 24 months ago right now. There were a few individuals in Missouri and in Beltsville that spent a lot of hours sorting through a lot of SNPs on some computers and were making files. And when we were at BIF in Fort Collins, Jerry was on a lack of sleep for quite a while because they had a deadline to develop the SNP 50, and it was a pretty exciting time with all of us envisioning that we could do with that. However, you know, is 50,000 enough? And it's maybe going to take more to really get this pinned down. But this was a huge first start and extremely important. At Pfizer Animal Genetics, we're using a robust system with some novel approaches in some of the analytical things that we're doing. We're using a lot of checks and balances. When we'll be commercially ready, and I'll just say this right up front, when we're confident in our offering, when we fully have assessed it from enough different angles, when we brought in some We have our internal group, but we also use outside people also in consulting and opening up and going over this process of what we're coming out. And the big part, when the products align with the customer's needs and expectations. And that's the vision. We want to bring this product to the market when it's right and ready, and we're putting a huge investment in that pipeline for the industry to do that. And not just U.S., but we're talking this globally, U.S., Australia, and in other parts of the world. So, and some of this I've already covered, but an analytical approach that makes genetic information usable today and in the future. So that's something that when you start thinking about. So as we talk about reduced panels, we talk about using all 50K. Is there a point of investment when you think about it that maybe 50K and with linkage to technologies coming down the road and ability to predict haplotypes and genotypes, is there a use at some extreme upper level seed stock selection as we think about it? And we can see that reduced panels and panels built for specific traits, panel built for suites of traits, panels built maybe to target branded markets, are all going to play a significant role in this field of bringing DNA to our national cattle evaluations. So who's doing this? And in our group, well, we feel that we've put together the best internal and external from an analytical methodology standpoint. We're using talent from all over the world. We're being very open to ideas. We're continually investing in the technology, the pipeline that we're building, and I'll show you a little bit of the traits in that going on right now. We're investing in thousands of animals of lots and lots of different breeds, lots of populations, and lots of phenotypes. And this is going to be a process that's going to have to continually keep happening and continually adding the phenotypes to make this work. But I'd say one of the greatest things that Pfizer Animal Genetics is putting a huge amount of effort into and is doing a wonderful job, and part of the reason I got so excited about joining this team, is human resources. We're assembling a team of people from all aspects of the industry in genetics to deliver a product with full service. And that goes beyond genotypes and MVPs to consulting, to helping people with breeding programs, strategic partnerships, but a full service type provider. And education is a huge part of that. And in being part of Global Technical Services, I find that extremely exciting and a lot of what I do on a day-to-day basis, all the way from working with our scientists in R&D, all the way to producers who are looking at implementing the technology or have implemented the technology in the past and are evaluating how they continue to move forward with it. So when you start looking at these are some abbreviated list of the traits that we have. Of course, we work on the traditional carcass traits and the traditional traits that we have EPDs for. I get extremely excited about the effort that we're putting into the input traits related to feed efficiency or components of feed efficiency that make up that. An area that I'm extremely excited about and the investment that we're putting into that in the projects that we have going on, continually feeding us more phenotypes, more animals to that. And it's going to take a lot, but I think when it's all said and done, an area that we need lots of investment because there's a huge amount of dollars that can be recouped, and markers are going to be the way for the industry to recoup and differences in efficiency. It's going to have to be through DNA markers. Even though there's a fair amount of data starting to be generated, we're never going to have the amount of individual feed intake data like we have for our growth traits or even for some of our carcass traits. And that's just a reality. It's extremely expensive to measure and hard to measure. We start thinking about unique traits, and this is a thing that really intrigues me. We have enabled, you start thinking of enabled, you want to call it MVP enabled traits, so to say, where how do we establish EPDs and MV and feed efficiency is a prime example of that. But traits related to animal health and looking at like feedlot health indexes, can we come up with enough information at a DNA standpoint to begin to help manage animals for propensity to need to be doctored or sorted and handled differently? And this area of animal health, I think, will be huge. And the product that we eat, there's some healthy components about beef that the industry does not do a real good job promoting and grabbing hold of more of the share of the protein product that we have. And one of our large projects in collaboration with the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium in Iowa State, looking at the healthfulness of beef. And I think there is a lot there. It's one of these unique traits that we can wrap our arms around as an industry in beef cattle and help promote the healthy consumption of beef, and you think about it along those lines. But this is another area like feed efficiency that I get super, super excited about, cow efficiency. and the things to go there. And our investment in this side of the industry is massive. And it's going to take, we're talking about traits that are multi-component, oftentimes lowly heritable. It's going to take a significant number of animals, lots of phenotypes, and lots of environments. So I'm only 6 months into this new position, but as Pfizer Animal Genetics has been building this pipeline and looking at whole genome selection and how DNA work is going to handle in the future, we understand that there's going to have to be significant investments in feeding this pipeline and continually feeding it. And cow efficiency is going to be a big part of that in working towards the future of genetic improvement in beef cattle. So the commitment to the industry, they started genotyping with the 50K chip last fall, and we're in the middle of genotyping over 20,000 plus animals for the 50K, and are dedicated to the technologies as they come down the line, adding to that the number of animals genotyped as we continue to add populations and add to the populations and the data. And so you can see the investment and commitment that our group is putting into this. This is has been a slide that I created a while back, taking a slide that Ronnie Green has used for a lot of years, but genetic selection in livestock as we know it, when we start thinking about national cattle evaluation and EPDs. And for me, this is really fun when you start thinking about the potential, and we heard a ton about it this morning. But when you start knowing, you know, we generate EPDs with phenotypic data and pedigree information, and it's this unknown set of genes. And now we suddenly have this part of the box that we actually can track. And that gets pretty excited, and we can start taking these MVPs, this genetic information, and putting that into our analysis and adding accuracy for those traits that we have. These genome or MVP-enabled EPDs, if you'd like to say. And you start thinking of young animals for a trait like feed efficiency, and if we can start seeing accuracies up in that 0.4, 0.5 range, and actually being able to do some genetic selection for a trait like feed efficiency becomes huge. And you start thinking of the rest of the traits, and if you want to call it the genome or like MVP-enabled traits, the EPDs, so to say, that will be generated on majority of it will be DNA information alone, except in those cases where we actually have some phenotypic information to go with to generate this right. But this has been something that all of us working in this area, when we 10 years ago, this talk of blending molecular and quantitative, you didn't hear a lot. Especially there were even a lot of universities where it was a molecular group and a quantitative group, and that used to, I really never understood that, because DNA is quantitative. I mean, it's quantitative genetics, and it's just another tool we can add to the toolbox. And so with that, I think I've probably hit my 10 minutes or so.
Excellent. Either way, I'll call you back up.
Great. Thank you, Mark. We'll have a little bit of a panel discussion Q&A at the end, so Mark, I'll be inviting you back up here in just a moment. Our next speaker is Dr. Brent Woodward. Brent, if you'd make your way forward, please. Brent works with the Igenity Group, headquartered in Georgia, formerly a faculty member at Minnesota and a number of other places. But Brent is going to give sort of the Igenity view on the world and whole genome-enabled selection here in just a second. Brent, I'll get your slides up for you. But we certainly appreciate you coming and sharing your view of the world, too. Great. Help me welcome Brent Woodward.
Well, good afternoon. Actually, Bob and I talked, I think maybe it was earlier even this week, and we decided we'd do a little blup analysis and figure out just how many minutes we would have left before there'd be a mass exodus for people wanting to get some liquid beverage other than water. And so I tried to keep this extremely short, but I think Mark made some really good introductory comments that can really probably cover the basis for the companies in general. I think one thing I would start off with before I just show a few slides is the fact that 5 years ago we started planning for really where we're at today, of course. And I also didn't think I had to give a lot of slides, because I knew with Dorian and Jerry talking earlier this morning about some of the research that we've been doing in collaboration with those groups and other groups, that you would have some insight already into where we're at actually with the business at Igenity. So I'm going to jump right into the fact that on the analytical side of things, we actually took an approach that said we're not going to use something that's been initially proposed by one researcher or maybe a second researcher, but we started looking at as many different methods as possible. And our star SNP whisperer, I guess, I heard yesterday is Donald Nkrumah, and he's the guy that's been behind a lot of these. And so as you look at this, he's looked at different methods and combinations of those methods where you start picking SNPs on a chromosome-by-chromosome basis, pulling them in, and using subsequent analytical methods to pull those in and make a panel of markers. And just looking at Bayesian methods, as you heard about earlier this morning, on their own and comparing those in various populations. All this has been done in collaboration with academia, government, and in some cases, what you didn't hear about is some of the collaborative work that's been going on at iGenity with even folks in the human side and other companies and taking advantage of the fact that it's not uncommon for them to be running 50,000, 100,000, 500,000, million SNP chips for a number of years already. And as we think about the fact that we needed all these data to be able to do these analysis, that process actually started 2 years ago in collaboration with these folks that we've already mentioned, and the genotyping and the populations being put in place for this. Jerry would have started, I don't remember what you said this morning, Jerry, but probably several years before that, just because of the amount of effort that goes into building a repository like he built. We've built our own repositories at Mariel, and that's been a pretty big effort on my own part, and I can tell you it is quite a bit of effort and time-consuming process, not to mention expensive. So Mark put up a list of traits, and I figured that between Mark and if Sue had been here, or maybe she's coming after me, she would have had a similar list of traits, so I didn't intend on spending a lot of time here. But what I can say is that we actually have resource populations and animals that are genotyped or in the process of being genotyped for all these traits, and so we're well on our way to being able to do that. So let's get to a really high-tech diagram that I put together here. I actually enlisted the help of my wife, but I won't blame her for the creativity part because I'm the one that has the lack of creativity. But I tried to put together a little simple diagram here to show. We're going to start with a 50K SNP. Of course, we have a lot of panels that are validated that Allison already talked about, and this would be the next wave coming from the 50K that gets at Bob's request to talk about whole genome selection. So I kind of intentionally made that box black with some white letters because it is pretty much a black box, although you heard some bits and pieces as to what that is. But I talked about that two slides ago when I said we looked at numerous different analytical methods to try and figure out what was the best method. And Donald's even written up a report showing a lot of those summary statistics to help us decide what's the best method to pick out the best panel that's the most cost-effective. So in that regard, we actually think about the fact that we'll be offering potentially different sizes of panels that will be determined more or less by a cost of what that panel can be. And, of course, the cost is going to be heavily dependent on the number of markers that are in that panel. So that's why I named them just simply small, medium, and large. Small might start at 100, and large might be in the thousands. And, of course, we're going to have a cost trade-off with the percent genetic variation explained. As you've heard from multiple speakers today, certainly as you get larger panels, in theory, you'll be able to explain more variation for a given trait. But, in fact, some of the research that Donald has, and we won't have time to go into today, shows that we can get as high as amount of variation explained in the 50% range, even with a 100-SNP panel, if those 100 SNPs are chosen properly. And that's even looking at them in development and then in the validation population. So we look at these as all being products. So we could offer a 50K chip analysis for those producers that may have what they consider to be a high-value AI sire or potentially a donor cow or something along those lines and can see their way clear to pay that $200 price tag roughly that might be today $2 to $250. We also can think about getting some fairly inexpensive panels if we think about that small, medium, and large version. So then you can have an ordering opportunity over here for the customer where they would pick one of those panels. It would be dependent on what type of traits they want covered by that. Maybe they, I've been with a number of large customers in the recent 60 days or so, and some of them look point blank at you and say, look, there's these three traits and that's all I'm interested in. And others like the fact that we have a profile that we'll give you that covers a number of traits. And of course, as we go forward, the way to decrease that cost when we think about these larger panels is to focus in on maybe offering that customer the opportunity to order exactly what they're interested in. Of course, we offer parentage, and we converted to SNP parentage early in, I think it was 2007, after doing a very large-scale project in 2006. So I'm not sure, can't remember when the commercial launch of that was. And that'll be coming to become the norm as well. I've worked with the International Society for Animal Genetics and the International Committee on Animal Recording over the last year to develop a standardized SNP testing process that would work for parentage and animal identification. So, and of course, defects have been covered today by Mark Tallman's talk, and everybody's certainly familiar with AM. Nobody just wanted to mention that by name, I think, other than it's easy to say curly calf, of course. So once we get those that order in from that customer, then we're going to generate, if it comes directly from an individual producer or AI company, for example, we would generate still at this time a score, which in the iGenity case, that means a 1 to 10 score. We still find that if we look at focus group types of results from a marketing standpoint, there's a core group of producers that want that simple, quick and dirty, you might call it, look at where does my animal fall on a 1 to 10 basis. That doesn't diminish the fact that we also are providing molecular breeding values to those individuals, and there's a growing group of you out there that are interested in that, and so that's available to you. And of course, all this can be downloaded to your own computer electronically from our secure website where you would log in with your own password. And because we offer parentage and the ability to do genotyping for a large number of traits, we'll give producers the opportunity to do a within herd genetic analysis. And I've simply written in there MA/GEPD, where an MA would stand for a marker-assisted EPD. And you've heard all kinds of ways of describing the same thing today, so I figured I might as well mix it up a little and add yet another one. That term, of course, has been around for a number of years. And the reason I'm separating them is I'm thinking of a marker-assisted or adjusted EPD simply to refer to those who have those breeds that have a trait already that has an EPD and we're adding a genomic component to it versus a genomic EPD or a GEPD, which would be a trait like tenderness, where most breeds don't have a tenderness EPD today. So it would be based purely on the genomic part of that coming back from iGenity. Now, we have agreements in place with breed associations already and national cattle evaluation companies. You know, probably there's a growing number of those types of situations out there where companies have either come out of breed associations or formed from multiple breed associations for the sole purpose of offering the service of national cattle evaluation. And so if we're in one of those distribution agreements, their membership are going to be coming to them to order iGenity tests. We're going to simply have a process in place. In fact, we have a process in place because we're already doing this part here, where these molecular breeding values come out of the order and they go back into the breed association where they can calculate those. You know, they're going to call them whatever they want. I've used the same terminology of a marker-assisted EPD or a genomic EPD, depending on whether they have an existing EPD or not. And at their choice, they can do exactly similar to what we do. They could immediately send out to their customer who's ordered iGenity profiles and provide them with the same iGenity scores and molecular breeding values on those individual animals, as well as potentially at some point some sort of interim value. And then, of course, as their genomic information is in the breed association database along with the identity of that animal, they'll be able to calculate and publish some version of marker-assisted or genomic EPDs. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. All of that has been explained multiple times today. So it's just a diagrammatic way of telling you that there are some logistics that I've certainly avoided here, in terms of how the DNA sample gets from the order that goes through the Breed Association into our hands and all. But we've already gone through that process and have that system in place, and it's working well, thanks to a lot of effort from Breed Associations and Dr. Jim Gibb, who works for us. And, of course, not leaving out the fact that we want to be able to work with those breed associations when we do have that type of relationship with them to feed some of that information back into the analysis part. Once again, you've heard multiple times today the fact that we need to keep cycling through this to make sure we have accurate estimates of those genomic effects that we're calculating the molecular breeding values with. And if we don't do that, then those will get outdated over time as producers make those accurate selection decisions based on either the genomic information alone or the combination of the genomic and existing EPD information that are calculated by the breeds. Getting close to the end, in reality, today we are not tied to any specific platform, which allows us a little more flexibility, you might find, in being able to drive the cost down and being able to offer more opportunities for different types of products that'll meet your needs at a cost-effective price for the amount of genetic variation that you think you need to be able to make your selection improvement decisions at the pace that fits your operation. I've got pictures here just pulled from the websites of three different companies that offer those different types of platforms for genotyping services. Finally, in terms of tools that are available, Bob, for actually implementing this technology, whether you're a customer directly working with us or you come through a breed association process, you would be able to log on to our secure website and get access to the software tools that are there. So you'd log into your account. It would pull up your genotype information. But as a result of coming in, and you could do a custom sort using your own genotypes and your molecular breeding values or based on an identity score basis, you could also do benchmarking, and that benchmarking could be against other animals in your own herd, could be against other animals in your breed of choice, and it could be against the entire identity database. So it's not going to tell you exactly what those animals are and what breed they are necessarily, but if you pick you're a limousine breeder and you want to benchmark against all other limousine animals that have been genotyped and identified as a limousine animal when they were submitted for a sample, you'd be able to do that to see more or less like what you do with a sire summary, where you look at what the average EPD is and you look to see whether your bull or your animals in your herd are above or below average for the EPD in that breed. So, and I've left out then the ROI calculator, or return on investment calculator. That's shown, certainly this is not meant for you to be able to see the detail here. This is a calculator to look at if I actually profiled a bunch of my replacement heifers that I was considering for replacement, I'd actually put in those costs and put in the value that I would expect to get out of those calves if I were to select replacement heifers that were anywhere from one identity score to multiple identity scores better than the rest of the heifers in that particular group that were profiled. And then dynamic prediction model. These are actually models that have been built that include economics as well as genotype information, and they're used to predict exactly, in one example would be in a feedlot scenario, when you would have the optimum marketing situation for a given animal based on its genetic potential for typical feedlot traits based on the genomics portion of the identity profile. So there's tools down the road, Bob, that they'd have available. So we've already talked about this to some extent in the fact that we have a fair number of traits, and I think at that I'll stop. Thank you.
Mark's on his way up, so thank you. What we'll do is give you all opportunity to ask these two gentlemen questions. I should say Dr. Sue Denise sends her regrets. She'd originally committed to be on the panel and at the last minute had to take care of some urgent business, so she declined the opportunity to join us today. If we've got questions for either Dr. Allen or Dr. Woodward, we'd be glad to field a few of those. I know we're standing between you and cold beverages, so we'll not try and stretch it out too long, but certainly want to open up the floor for some questions. Yes, sir.
Yeah,